Sandy. Fireworks are hailing over Little Eden tonight. Forcing a line in all those stoned out faces left stranded on this 4th of July. Down in town, the circuit's full with switchblade lovers, so fast, so shiny and sharp. And the wizards play down on Pinball Way on a boardwalk way past dark. And the boys from the casino dance with their shirts open like Latin lovers.
So, that of course is Bruce Springsteen and the immortal Danny Federici, who's no longer with us, on accordion. Gino Auriemma's in studio with me. I didn't tell you I was going to play that, but when I did, an expression of wistful delight crossed your face. So tell me about that. What's your react to that song? What's it mean to you?
Well, I think anybody who's grown up in the Philadelphia, New Jersey area, spend any summers at any point in time in any of those beach communities can relate to any of those songs about being a kid or being in college and doing things that you're supposed to be doing when you're in beach towns like that. And the interesting thing about the songs that Bruce Springsteen sings is they're so... they're so true to life of the area and of the people growing up there that anyone who is associated with that immediately equates it to an event that happened in their lives. He's really, really one of the few that connects with you on that. Maybe that's why he's so enduring all these years.
Yeah. You got stuck in a freight elevator one time trying to...
I did. There was 12 of us in the elevator. We were going to a Springsteen concert and... the elevator goes up, and it goes in between the first and second, and it just stops. Mm-hmm. And now we're thinking, all right, this will only be a couple seconds. It'll pop back up and hit 10 minutes, 20 minutes, 30 minutes go by, you know, and we're sitting in there, and everybody's getting a little claustrophobic, and people are getting a little bit overboard, you know. Mm. You know, hey, please tell me. Stop it. Nobody's going anywhere. So, you know, we're not gonna have to do anything drastic here. And we could hear the people talking down below,
right,
saying, "All right, coach, you know, we'll take care of this. You know, bye bye. Just have to wait a little bit longer." And the funny thing about it was they could get us down,
mm-hmm,
but they weren't authorized to do that. The person who's authorized to do that had to come in because, you know, the union thing and how how it works. And somebody said, you know, he waited a little bit because I guess they must have told him or something. I don't buy it, but we missed two songs, I think.
All right. That's not too bad.
Not bad.
But it's a long time to be in an elevator.
It is a long time to be in an elevator.
Yeah. We're talking to Gino Auriemma. He has 999 wins as a basketball coach. So it's the only time we're going to mention basketball in this interview, but I believe on Tuesday night you will have an opportunity to achieve 1,000 wins. He's achieved everything else a basketball coach can possibly achieve. But we want to talk about other stuff, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, I achieved the sense of immortality years and years ago when notoriety maybe connected with you because you had my daughter crying. My daughter was crying at home when I got home one day, right, because a certain radio person was bashing her father,
right,
about this incredibly generous thing that I did for one of his players, who now if he looks back, he's going to feel so ashamed that he did that. But, you know, here I am.
And, we're going to talk more about this, but I'll go there right now. I was talking to you about it. We're the same age, basically. We're about 6 months apart in age.
Yeah.
And I actually do look back at that, and I feel bad. I feel really bad. I didn't feel bad at the time.
Of course not.
But I feel bad about that. I feel bad about being – I was on TIC, as you know, for 16 years, and they kind of paid me to be a brat. And I was a brat. I was a brat on the air. You one time, okay, we're going to tell
you. You would have done it for free.
So one day we're in St. Louis and we're walking down a hallway. I can't remember who the other basketball coach was, but from a women's team somewhere else in the country. The three of us are walking down a hallway in St. Louis at the playoffs. And you turned to him and you pointed to me and you said, do you know who this is? And he said, no. And you said, this is the biggest pain in the ass in Connecticut. and so it is true that we've kind of got on each other's nerves at certain times over the course of our lives. But I do feel, I mean, we're both 63. And I was saying to you before we went on the air, I just feel like, boy, a lot of things are changing in the way that I look at the world. And I'm wondering about you. I mean, not that you've, you know, taken your foot off the gas pedal at all as a competitor, but I'm wondering, as a man, do you feel like things are looking different?
Well, first of all, you know, where I come from, down in the Philadelphia area, what I said to you that day in St. Louis is kind of a term of endearment, you know.
This was explained to me by one of your players.
Otherwise, if I would have just ignored you and said, see this guy right here, he's pointless.
Right.
And then, but it, I think what we look at now, I think at our age, at least from my standpoint, is we tend to see things now maybe a little bit clearer. But we tend to see them through lenses that have a filter on them, maybe more so than they used to in some ways, because you start to go, is that really important to me right now?
Mm-hmm.
Like, do I really need to do this?
Right.
Like, do I really have to do it?
Mm-hmm.
Do I want to do it? Do I have to say this? You know, why do I have to spend time with people I don't want to spend time with?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's part of your job. Well, you know, that's too bad. I don't want to do it anymore, so I'm not going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So we end up seeing things and looking at and trying to, I know I have anyway, try to downsize what I have, downsize my thoughts, downsize my beliefs, you know, and not get too, you know, too big for my brain. My brain can't handle all that anymore. I'm not, you know, I saw this great line recently. it said, I'm not young enough to know everything about everything.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. Yeah.
You know?
I mean, in our 40s and 50s, I think we felt like we had to at least take a shot at that, right?
That's right.
Yeah. Or we were maybe not confident enough to admit the impossibility of that. But I feel like now, like if I don't know something or I'm, you know, screwing something up or something, well, you know.
That's my favorite answer now. Like, what do I care? And or I'll say, what's that have to do with me?
Yeah.
Or what's that have to do with anything?
Mm-hmm.
How important is that really? And in some ways, you know, maybe it is, but I find myself, you know, hearing my wife say to me more often than not, she'll go, wow, you're becoming like a real renegade. Mm-hmm. I go, I don't know. Am I? She goes, yeah. You went to the store in your pajamas. I go,
that could be because you're losing your mind.
Isn't that what old people do? They just get up out of bed, throw a coat on,
right,
put their snow boots on because it's snowing, and go to the store. So they have their pajamas on. So what?
Well, that kind of stuff could come up at a competency hearing at some point. But some of that is, I think that is true. And I also find, you know, I think more and more as I'm in this age about my father and ways in which things that I thought he didn't understand, there's now an analog for what I don't understand too. Do you find yourself thinking about, I mean, you're your father's age, you know, as you get older, right, at certain points.
Right.
You find yourself thinking a little bit about that?
Yeah. My father passed away when he was 70. And I think, man, that's only 7 years from now. But I do every once in a while do think back and I go, man, my experiences were so much different than his growing up. And yet now I find myself doing the same exact things.
Mm-hmm.
Like maybe last week, I come home, there's a chair that I sit in and I want to watch a particular show or something, or watch a game, or which I don't do very often, watch any games. But I remember sitting there and I'm having a glass of wine and it, like, this came over my face, like this look, like, do you know that you've done this now every night that you've been home at the exact same time? And this is the stuff that you used to look at your father with and go, this is all he does. He goes to work, he comes home, goes right to that spot, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
And that's where he's going to be until he falls asleep watching Walter Cronkite or something. And he didn't understand what the hell Walter was saying because he doesn't speak any English. But he had an opinion on what Walter just said, like most guys his age. And I find myself doing the same thing, just getting so angry sometimes, like he did, at stuff that makes no sense.
Yeah. I think also the other part of that is that we thought that our fathers were products of their time and products of their human condition. Your father, as you say, came over from Italy, not really speaking English. But some of it is some of these problems don't change. I mean, the problem of like being in a moment with your kid, you know, and knowing to be in that moment and treat it as a real moment, things like that. You know, we're dealing with the same stuff. And you've got grandkids now. I mean, we're dealing with the same stuff. Maybe we learn some lessons from them, but I think more often than that, we repeat certain patterns that we just learn from them, or they're in our DNA or something.
Yeah, I do think if somebody were to say to me, "What did you learn from your father?" Mm-hmm. I really can't give you anything specific. Mm-hmm. Again, because he wouldn't have the ability to sit there when I was 18 mm-hmm. and have him sit there and go, all right, listen, son, when I was your age living here in America, this is what, you know, let me give you my perspective on what happened and why and my experience. To him, it was foreign. Mm-hmm. It's like he just left Earth and moved to Mars. So now he's living on Mars mm-hmm. and now he's going to talk to his son who's grown up on Mars and said, let me tell you about life on Mars. Well, you know, so I really didn't learn anything, but I act like him, so it is DNA.
Yeah.
It has to be. It can't be anything else.
Well, you act like him also because you saw how he acted too. It's DNA and it's also you watched him. You watched him go to work every day. You watched him work in a steel mill, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you do see that. And like, he never lifted a finger around the house. I mean, nothing. Mm-hmm. You know, I've always I tell this story every time I speak at places, you know, like these Italian stereotypes, and which, by the way, I'm a huge stereotype guy. Mm-hmm. I believe in stereotypes like you wouldn't believe.
They exist for a reason.
Because they exist for a reason.
Yeah.
So this Italian stereotype of the strong macho guy, you know, like, you know, you've been watching all the movies, you know, so every person thinks that every Italian guy is either Marlon Brando as Vito Corleone or, you know, Frank Sinatra. And in reality, they are pointless because the only person's opinion that matters in their home is their mother. That's the only opinion that matters. And these guys, they may be tough guys and they talk tough and they do this and that. When they come home, they have no say. Maybe that's why they're such tough guys outside their house, because they carry no weight inside the house.
Yeah.
So he did nothing. My mom did everything. Mm-hmm. Every single solitary thing you could think of, my mother did it.
Mm-hmm.
Everything. And now when I find myself like floating around my house or floating through my life and watching Kathy, you know, do this and do that and do this and go here and do this and take care of that and blah, 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 blah. I go to myself, oh, my God, I'm living with my mother and I'm my father. What the hell's wrong with this picture?
Can you cook a meal? Can you cook? You love food.
I can.
Yeah.
I can. Actually, I make pretty good veal Milanese, by the way.
All right. I mean, I know we run into each other at restaurants sometimes.
I love restaurants.
You eat at El Forno.
I love restaurants.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love a great restaurant.
They do a nice cannelloni at El Forno.
So
we're going to go to a break here in just a second, but just to sort of play this out a little bit.
Yeah, break. So miss, who, what?
We just did a little break for you to have a little drink of water.
Oh, okay.
You know, that
kind of thing. I thought you were selling something.
Well, actually, we are going to do a little fundraising later. You don't have to participate.
Okay.
You may have heard of that.
I remember that when all of our games were on CPTV. Yes.
So, well, you know, just to go back to that idea, okay, of the stereotype and of the guy who's tough. So you had, in your 40s and 50s, and I think to a certain degree, even now, a public persona that is brash and tough, and I'm going to mess with you before you even try to mess with me. Maybe I'm not. Maybe that's not how you see it. I know in your book you say that you think that the public persona is a faulty perception of who you really are.
For sure.
Yeah.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, I don't know that anybody is totally like they're perceived. I was reading an article recently about how to find out how you're really perceived, and you know, and are you willing to listen to the truth about that? Because how we think we're being viewed and how we actually are being viewed are never the same thing. So I know that the reputation that I have as a coach, it comes from what they've seen on the sideline when I was younger, and you know, ranting and raving at my players or the officials or just life, and some of the things that I've said in the media, some of the comments that I've made. But if they were to ever see me away from all that, they would really see that I don't like any of it. Matter of fact,
you don't like any of what?
I don't like any of the attention that comes my way.
Yeah, yeah.
I hate it.
Right. No, I actually know that about you.
To the point where we had our bench moved at Gamble so that I didn't have to walk across the court and have people staring at me. So my wife said to me, get over it. You're not that important. Nobody's looking at you.
No, my son and I, we were, this is about maybe a few months ago, we were in West Harford Center, and we saw you. You were about to enter a store, and some young girl suddenly realized it was you, and you dove into the store. You dove like Greg Louganis into the store.
Yeah.
You really didn't want to be there at all. You didn't want that kind of attention.
And I don't wear any, like, anything on my person that leads people to believe who I am, where I work. If you come into my house, I would challenge you to walk anywhere in my house and find anything that says I'm the coach at the University of Connecticut or that we've won X number or whatever. I just don't like it. I wish I could go back to being an unknown, walking the streets and going to places. But it comes in handy sometimes.
It can.
It comes in handy.
Yeah.
I get certain things that other people don't get.
Right. Well, we might talk about a few of those things as we go along here. My son and I were laughing that day, though, because we thought, oh, boy, he wants
I'm
to get on
you.
We were laughing at you.
It's terrible.
Okay, we are going to take a break. I want to conclude this segment by saying another thing that you called me on a different occasion is a term that begins with a word that sounds like spit, and then the second word is disturber. And I did talk to my personal private authority on all things Gino, who said, oh, no, that's a compliment. He calls me that, too.
Yeah.
All right. We're going to take a break. We'll be back. Sparks fly on East Street when the boy prophets walk at handsome and hot. All the little girls' souls go weak when the man child gives them a double shot. Well, we could just play Springsteen all day, but then we wouldn't get to talk that much. So let's talk about this special things. Have you had sat down and had a conversation with the boss?
By the way, before you go, no, I've never met
You've
him.
Never talked to the boss?
No, I want to. I want to.
Because I feel like you get to talk to anybody you want to.
I know.
Talk to.
I have had a chance to talk to a lot of. I met one of my other. I met the Midwestern version of Bruce Springsteen, Bob Seger.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, okay.
I met him, and delightful guy, and. You know, this is a funny story real quick. When I was in college, there's only two bars in Westchester at the time, small college town. So we were in one of them, and this guy comes in, you know, that we know, and he says, hey, you guys want some tickets to show over at, you know, the concert hall on campus? Like, nah, not really. How much are they? $2. I said, $2. Who's playing? I don't know. This guy, Bruce Springsteen. And some band. I don't know who it is. Because they're in that area in Bryn Mawr.
Yeah.
There was a great club, and they used to have young bands come in, and that a lot of them would get discovered there. So we're like, I never heard of them. Forget it. So we continued doing what we were doing that night. So this is in the middle of the winter. And then I think it was that spring. He's on the cover of Time magazine. He's on the cover of Newsweek, you know, and Born to Run comes out and all that. And I was reading someplace where the Born to Run LP was by Rolling Stone magazine, I believe, designated as the top album of all time. Mm. And the number one song is Thunder Road.
Those are good choices.
It's perfectly written.
It is perfectly written.
It's a perfectly written song.
Although it's got like eight different musical movements in it,
does.
Too.
It
is a song that, you know, Irving Berlin probably would not have.
It's not. It would not be easily replicated on any American Idol or The Voice or anything like that. They're an incredibly talented group, and I'm fascinated by people who can do that kind of stuff.
So speaking of people you get to talk to, true or false that occasionally Bill Clinton has called you up?
Yes.
He has called you up.
True.
What do you guys talk about?
You can't get him off the phone. You would think that he would go, I know you're pretty busy. You're trying to save the world. Back when he had he's doing all these philanthropic things where he's involved in charities and global, you know, the summit that he was involved in. And one, he loves to talk about basketball, and he loves to talk about sports, and then he segues always into how that relates to what he's doing and why he's doing it, and then he segues that a little bit into how that plays into what's happening in the world today, and if you're not careful, you just get taken along, and next thing you know, you started in Hartford and you just ended up somewhere where, you know, it's like this person that we know as a coach. They say, you know, talking to her is like reading a Russian novel. It's pretty good until all of a sudden you're in the middle of it and you go, how the hell do I get out of this?
Do you think also there's something, I mean, I don't want to force the comparison where there isn't one, but yeah, you're the son of a steel mill worker who didn't speak English.
Right.
He grew up, you know, in Arkansas under conditions that wouldn't necessarily suggest the production of a future president of the United States. You guys are like risen way above where you started from. Mm-hmm. You remember what it was like before. I don't know. Is there any of that in whatever affinity you guys feel? Because Bill Clinton does not call me up for a second.
Everybody has issues, and obviously his issues have been brought to the public enough that then they don't need to be discussed. So I think the way he operated to become the president of the United States, and then the way he operated as president to serve two terms, and how he just seems to control the environment that he's in is pretty much a classic example of a man who, on the strength of their personality alone, pretty much got to where he got. Yeah. Forget, he's obviously a very intelligent guy. I mean, you're not going to get that. But at the same time, he just has this uncanny ability to rally people around him. And
that could be a description of you, too.
Yeah. I agree with that. I really do. I agree with that. I can't run for president because I wasn't born in this country, nor would I want to be.
We're going to talk in the final segment about whatever political ambitions you may have. Oh, although, you know, President Obama, I think, joked that he was going to name a room after you in the White House because you guys have been there so many times.
I know.
So, go ahead.
If it was back in the old days when people didn't really start to make it so, I guess it's always been, you know, what war is politics and politics is war, you know. It's always been a kind of a battleground. Maybe more so than it is today, but maybe the world has changed in the last, you know, year based on what's happening. But I think a lot of good people are not that I'm one of those, are shying away from running from office
because mm-hmm.
they don't want to deal with the other stuff you have to deal with from a personal nature and what it does to your family.
Right.
Whereas before, your family was kind of out of it. It was just you and this is what you are and this is what you stand for. And I think now it becomes not only are you running for public office, you, your family, everyone your family knows, everyone you've ever met, everything you've ever done becomes part of your and I don't know that anybody could withstand that.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, I only got a minute left. This is a complicated question, but you may be faced with bringing your team to the current White House in this year, next year, next time you win a championship. What are you going to do about that?
You know, I was asked last year, and we lost. So maybe the more times I'm asked this, the more we're going to lose. Because, and this is something else I want to get to talk about maybe when we get back.
Yeah.
Do you realize how many people contact me slamming me for whatever opinion I have that doesn't jive with their opinion?
Mm-hmm.
Stay in your lane. Who the hell are you? Well, what? Just because I coach basketball at UConn, I'm not allowed to have an opinion?
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's two kinds of people that live in the world today.
Yeah.
Experts,
mm-hmm.
which are very few,
mm-hmm.
and those with an opinion,
right.
which are a lot.
Right.
And a lot of times when you turn on the TV, for 10 people that are on TV that you're watching, there's one expert and nine people that have an opinion.
I got lots of opinions, and I don't win any basketball games. So, you know.
Hey, that's right. So, you know, you're just another guy with an opinion, and I'm an expert that has opinions on things I know nothing about.
And that's a beautiful place for us to end this segment. All right. Some nice people are going to ask you to support conversations like this one. I could have Gino give you a motivational speech about pledging, but that's a force of nature I'm not prepared to harness.
Was it really necessary for Gino to make me run wind sprints before I do these credits? Really? Today's show was produced by Jonathan McPants and me, Kyone Wolf. Amanda Fish doesn't play defense. Part of Bill Curry was played by Kelly Schumacher. On tomorrow's show, our salute to the Postal Service. And now, back to Colin.
You know, Bill Curry actually ruined one of your greatest games, one of the greatest UConn women's games. The Notre Dame game, the one where Shea Ralph tragically got hurt, because he was such a Kelly Schumacher fan. He had like kind of a crush on her. And so like the whole game he's going, put Kelly in. Get the ball to Kelly. Get the ball to Kelly. I'm like, you shut up. I'm trying to watch a game here. People are looking at us.
I know. People have their favorites.
Yeah, people do have their favorites. All right, but we're not talking about basketball. This is Gino Auriemma. He's here. I just, you know, I mean, this is well covered by you in your book and everywhere else too, but I just, you spent the first, 7 years of your life in a very, very small town in Italy, right? In Montella, is what it's called?
Absolutely. Yeah.
And this, I mean, your living conditions are very different from where they were very different from, I mean, you have burns on your stomach, right?
Yeah.
From coal.
Yeah.
Explain that.
Well, what happens, you know, you're living in the mountains. I'm sure there's places in Appalachia or places in America that are very similar.
Yeah.
You know, we live in a small little village in the mountains east of Naples. Mm-hmm. And you know, you have a house where by standards, apparently, my mother married my father because his family had a horse.
Mm-hmm.
So that made them very valuable because they could, you know, it's like a Mel Brooks one. Hey, let me use that horse. You know any guys with a horse? Yeah, that guy. So downstairs was more of a stable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was like Jesus, you know, I was born in a stable. So what ends up happening is you live in a house where there's no electricity or running water or, you know, you think about what your kids have today. I mean, there's nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And everything you eat is what either grows in the back or you have to go out back and shoot it or whatever you got to do with it or grow. So the way we would keep warm is there was like four or five of us. I was like maybe two at the time. And they sit you around this almost like a campfire, you know, when the hot coals, you know, and the thing burns and it keeps everybody warm, you know. And my aunt, I guess, who was in charge of watching us, Department of Children Services would have had a field day with her back then. She fell asleep or something. I don't know. But I guess I nodded off and I just fell forward right into this bed of coals.
Yeah.
And yeah. And I guess it was a sign because my mother said I didn't cry.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what that says about me.
Tough guy.
I think there's something wrong with me. You know, I'm one of those people, I guess, because now every little thing, and I go, ooh, you know, I can't watch scary movies. I can't watch anything like
that. Do you get like misty-eyed at life insurance commercials, you know?
No, but I can't go through watching It's a Wonderful Life without getting teared up a little bit.
Right.
You know, things like that. There are certain songs that when they come on the radio, they make me, like choke
what?
Up.
Like what?
Well... For instance, Bob Seger's song about Roll Me Away makes me think, wow.
Mm. Yeah.
Wow. Imagine that. There's, you know, so when I think back to my childhood, I think about... How simple it was and how unbelievably carefree it was.
Mm-hmm.
Your world was just so unencumbered by anything.
Mm-hmm.
You had to worry about nothing.
Yeah.
Zero. And you had nothing. You know?
Mm-hmm. Didn't ride in a car until you were making
Didn't ride in a car until we left that village.
Mm-hmm.
To go to Naples to get on the boat.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't wait to get in another car. So when we landed 13 days later in New York, and my uncle picked us up, and that's another song that tears me up, is Paul Simon and Garfunkel's song about coming, you know.
Mm-hmm. We've all gone to look for America?
Riding the New Jersey Turnpike.
Yeah.
And right away I start to get chills, and I'm thinking, man.
Yeah.
That ride, I can remember like it was yesterday. So we get to my aunt's house where we were all going to live, and the church that we ended up joining and where the grade school was probably, I want to say, a block and a half, maybe a block from our house. And Sunday morning, I jump up and I run out and I get in the car.
Mm-hmm.
And my uncle comes out and he goes, "Where are you going?" I said, "I'm ready. I'm going to church." He goes, "Get the hell out of the car." Like, it's right there.
Yeah.
I wanted to ride the car so bad. And even to this day, I refuse to go anywhere where I'm not driving.
Mm-hmm.
I jumped in my car and drove to Florida. And, you know, on the way back, 19 hours straight, I never got from behind the wheel.
I'm the opposite.
I can't be in the car unless I'm driving. And I would drive, if I could, I would drive a different car every day. I'd be like Jay Leno. I would have 30, 40 cars.
What did you drive here?
A BMW that I get from my friends at Jengris.
So the music thing is interesting because I was doing a little research into Montella, where you're from.
Yeah.
And there's a famous singer who's from there too, right?
Is there?
This guy here. His name is Aurelio Fierro.
Amore mio. Fierro is a famous name in Montella.
Yeah,
Fierro.
Yeah, this guy he's not as famous as you are. You're the most famous guy from Montella.
It means iron.
Yeah, but he is from Montella.
Fierro.
Yeah. And he's, you know,
I didn't know that.
Look him up.
I will.
I'm so, you know, happy.
My favorite Italian singer is Bruno Venturini.
Yeah. See, I wish if I'd known that, we would have loaded up a
couple. Yeah, well, I've got it on my phone.
Oh, okay.
I've got his album on my phone.
So I did want to talk to you a little bit about movies. You like old movies. I can
do.
Tell that. Yeah.
I do.
But recently, one of your former players and friends encouraged you to see a movie called Whiplash. It's about a young drummer and about the ferocious jazz conductor and music instructor who is trying to get every last ounce of excellence out of him. This particular person who asked you to go see this movie felt that there might be some similarities. J.K. Simmons plays this role. Let's hear a little bit of that.
Why do you suppose I just hurled a chair at your head, Neiman?
I don't know.
Sure you do.
The tempo?
Were you rushing or were you dragging?
I don't know.
Start counting.
5, 6, 7.
In 4, damn it! Look at me!
1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Now, was I rushing or was I dragging?
No.
Count again.
1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Rushing or dragging?
Rushing.
So you do know the difference! If you deliberately sabotage my band, I will f*** you like a pig. Now, are you a rusher, or are you a dragger, or are you going to be on my f***ing time?
I'm going to be on your time.
All right, so that's Miles Teller. I'll start you. So why are you laughing?
I have to preface this by saying, first of all, I didn't know the movie until a certain 6'5 player we won't mention from Southwick, Massachusetts.
Says, my secret source about
says
you.
To me, yeah, says to me, hey, have you seen the movie Whiplash? I said, no. She goes, you should. Mm-hmm. And I said, why? This is over text. I said, why? She goes, I think you'll find it interesting. There's some similarities. And I thought, I wonder what that is. So I looked up the review, and I read it, and I went, wait a minute. What is she trying to tell me? So I said, I got to see this movie. So I get the movie. I watch it. And I am, like, speechless as I'm watching this. And I was like, you've got to be kidding me. Mm-hmm. He's the most despicable human being in the world. Mm-hmm. I said, oh, my God. So I watched it again, and then I made my son watch it, and then I made my team watch it at school. And I always preface it by saying, listen, this movie I'm going to show you, do not focus on the guy who's the teacher here. Do not. Mm-hmm. All right? And I don't want you to think I'm condoning his actions, because I'm not. Mm-hmm. But I need you to see this. And when they saw it, the rest of that year, as a matter of fact, Kalina Lewis, I'll never forget, I was looking right at her during one of the timeouts, and I said, listen, you guys, like right now, the way we're playing, This is not the way we normally play. This is not our tempo. You got it? So, and I made a fist and I said, that's not my tempo. And they just cracked up and started laughing, because that's obviously, he says that a lot. But I made them focus on the part of Miles Teller.
Yeah, the young drummer.
What he was willing to do
right.
to be the greatest drummer in the world.
Yeah.
And I said, that's the lesson you should take from this. How much he's willing to endure, how much he's willing to sacrifice, and unless you're ready to leave that blood on the drum, mm-hmm. then you know you may not ever be great until you're willing to sacrifice that much, and it may not be worth it to you.
Mm-hmm. I'm also wondering whether that has something to do with your Springsteen thing, because this is another person who will sacrifice. I've seen him in concert lots mm-hmm. of times. Maybe you've seen him
yeah.
more. But there's just no sense that there's anything like an off night or
no.
anything like that.
No. No. And you would not believe how many times I use that analogy and say, when kids go, oh, that's my bad, they forgot a certain aspect of what we were doing. Mm-hmm. Or they didn't remember, you know, this out of bounds play or something. And they would go, my bad. And I would go, seriously, like, and I'll stop them. I say, what's the last concert you guys went to? And they'll invariably give me somebody that they saw in concert. And I go, how much you pay for those tickets? And they would tell me. I said, well, let me ask you a question. Did they get every third line wrong in the song? Did you walk out of there going, I could do that? Mm. No. When people step on the stage to perform, they expect to perform perfectly. Mm. So I take them to shows. We play St. John's in New York all those years. We take them to a Broadway show. Mm-hmm. And I would say to them after the show, guys, you know, this was Tuesday night. You know they're doing this again tomorrow and the next day mm-hmm. and the next day and twice on Saturdays. You know that, don't you? And they're going to make everyone feel like it's the first one. Mm-hmm. Because why? That's the only time that audience gets to see it. And they're paying a lot of money to see perfection. Mm-hmm. So keep that in mind when we're playing.
Okay, we got 2 minutes left. You used the phrase to describe yourself recently. I'm on the back nine. Now, that could mean a lot of different things. As like I said, we're both 63.
Yeah.
But can you envision a post-basketball life? Is there a thing that you – are you going to start painting like George W. Bush? Or what do you – you know, what would that be even?
Well, I would love to learn how to play the piano. Mm-hmm. I've tried it, and I love music, every single kind of music you can imagine. I love it. And I would love to be able to play the piano, even just a little bit, mm-hmm. just enough to make me feel like I could actually improve on that.
Mm-hmm.
I'd never be great at it, never, but just enough to bang out a couple, you know, little chords, you know. So that I wish I could do.
Run for office?
No. Although I do think, and I don't, you know, again, this is my opinion. So anybody listening out there that goes, what do you know? I said, well, I know as much as you do. And if you were sitting here, you would have the chance to say it. So what I'm saying is, I think this state probably does best with a Republican governor. Because why? Because we're such a Democratic state to begin with.
Yes.
And that good balance.
Work against type a little bit.
It would be a little bit, yeah, it would be a pretty good balance.
We're going to have to stop here. There's a lot of other things I hope that we could talk about. The time is short. Gino Auriemma, first of all, good luck on Tuesday night. Not that you need
luck. Oh, we're done, huh?
Yeah, we're done. This is it.
Oh, wow.
I know.
I can't believe that.
I know. I got an iPad full of other stuff to talk to you about.
We didn't get into any of this stuff. That's all right, though.
All right, come back. Come back next year.
Yeah, maybe we'll have to do that. Actually, this would be something that I wouldn't mind doing on a regular basis.
Yeah, it'll be like your checkup.
To cover a lot of bases.
Yeah.
Right. You know? Because it's always good when you have two people.
Right.
Because, you know, people listen to you and they think you're an authority. And I think it would be like Congress here.
Yeah.
There's got to be checks and balances.
Right.
So I would need to be the interpreter for stuff that you say that makes no sense to the people that need an explanation.
This could be your next career. We'll have our own Drive Time Radio show.
There you go.
All right, Gino Auriemma, thank you so much for doing this today. And thanks for listening. If you're out there, nice people will ask you to support public radio. Please do that, particularly if you enjoyed what you just heard.